The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Happy November, coming up in a few months. Happy Christmas. Happy end of 2014. Almost here. It is November, right before Christmas. And I'm going to tell you, we're in September, but watch how quickly November gets here. It's bizarre. What was I going to say? The opening music, my opening theme music, that's what it was. I've been using it for years. And it was real creepy. It's a composite of a lot of different sounds and textures and emotive responses that do reflect or did reflect what was going on. But I don't honestly think it's creepy enough. I'm going to look for something creepier to reflect the world we're in right now. It is really something out there. George Filer. Major Filer is with us the first Tuesday of each month, a gentleman's gentleman, one of the great people in ufology, and he puts out the finest online weekly newsletter in the field of UFO, ET, and historic, well, research in the field that you'll ever want to find. You can get it free. There's no charge. All you have to do is ask, and I'll tell you right now how to do it. Just send an email to George at MajorStar@Verizon.net. MajorStar, and he is, at Verizon.net. Hello, George. Welcome back, friend. How are you?
I'm fine. I happen to be in the middle of a thunderstorm down here on the New Jersey coast.
Yeah, but you're at Surf City, and it's summer. Not supposed to be thunder.
Well, it was 91 or something today, but we just had a thunderstorm coming by. In case you lose me or something, you know what's going on. And I asked a friend to come on, you know, later and fill you in on some important cases in Missouri.
We're very good. We'll look forward to that in a little bit. That'll be nice. For all of you who are online, you can go to Rents and look in the top of headlines. And James Neff, my webmaster, has put up the current editions of George's wonderful, really is a wonderful presentation of this very strange enigma that this asinine government continues to pretend doesn't exist. It's all real. And we are being visited, have been visited, probably for millions or maybe even a billion years. Who knows? Life has arisen and fallen in this solar system and galaxy and universe of ours beyond countable times. And to deny the fact that other civilizations have cracked through advanced physics, new physics, and certainly modes of travel. To deny that is to be really, unfortunately, stupid. We are not the be-all and end-all of life in the universe. We are in a very backwaters portion of the Milky Way galaxy. We are an extremely primitive regressing species, which has by and large destroyed our home planet with Fukushima and many other factors. It is said now that GMO crops, GMO, could in and of itself wipe out life on the planet ultimately. So, yeah, we've done a great job here. What a trash can. There are some wonderful people in this trash can, George Filer being one of them, of course, and you people certainly comprising a significant portion of what I would consider the viable, essential remnants of what was a wonderful society. And those of you listening all around the world are included in that. It's a world community and a world society, really. Okay, George, what do you got on tap for us tonight?
Well, I think your listeners are probably some of the smartest people on Earth, that they realize that something's wrong and that our scientific information is not as much as we would like, and our political situation is wrong, and our religious situation is not very well doing well either. That, like Francis Crick, who was the discoverer of our DNA, said that it's virtually impossible for this to have occurred by chance, in other words, through evolution, that more than likely an alien group or meteorites or whatever brought DNA to Earth.
Well, somebody built it. DNA didn't just happen. It's a machine. It's a construct. It's a functioning machine. That's my view of it. A receiver,
right,
an antenna, as it were, a broadcaster, whatever, a repository of individual nodules of information that actually manifests the being that carries it around. It shows every sign of being intelligently designed.
Well, he won the Nobel Prize for finding the DNA and recording some of it and developing how much we are, in fact, very technical and very, complicated, that he felt it just could not have happened by accident.
I agree. I totally agree. What was his name again?
Francis Crick.
Crick.
C-R-I-C-K. He was an Englishman.
Uh-huh. Well, it's like the Einstein of his day was a man named William Crookes, Sir William Crookes in England, a scientist of the first magnitude in the world. And he eventually got into studying the paranormal. And it was very interesting what he unearthed and published. And he had everything to lose, a career, the top, the most prestigious position in the scientific world. Sir Oliver Lodge, another one, who studied the paranormal, the idea of ghosts and spirits, and that we don't die and our consciousness continues on in an electromagnetic form, if you will, just to keep it simple. And it was known in the 1880s, 1890s, that there was more to this game than meets the eye, and those were some very bright people back then.
Well, a lot of people are looking into that and finding out that what we think we know is just the very tip of the iceberg.
If that, yeah. I couldn't agree more. Now, let me again point you to the center column at Rents, and James has put up George's issues number 33, 34, and 35 for you, right at the top there. You want to take a quick peek, look at one of these, and then we'll bring on your special guest? Which one would you like to take a look at?
Oh, I don't have any favoritism.
Well, you put me on the spot here, George. Come on.
I will say that our friend Clark McClung is releasing a lot of information. from NASA when he worked there for some 34 years.
And, he's been sending it to me.
On the program.
Yeah, he's been sending it to me for safekeeping, and he's releasing a lot of it. Clark is a very brave man, a very great American, a true American patriot, hero, and scientist. And what this government has done to him is beyond measure in criminality. And I just constantly wish him the very best. He's in my thoughts often, and we talk, and it's just a very sad story what's happened to him. But he is still at it, and bless him for that.
Well, I've been encouraging people to send help to him, but he indicates that a large disc-shaped object appeared below the Columbia shuttle. That was 190 nautical miles high.
Mm-hmm.
And astronaut Dr. Story Musgrave, a payload specialist on the STS-80 mission, was interviewed following the flight, indicating that he had seen something, you know, flying near the STS mission that was, more than likely, frankly, was from outer space. And he says, I don't know what it was, whether it was a washer, debris, or ice particles, but it was something that was huge out there. The astronauts don't say too much, but they... there's often video that's seen that it explains very simply what it was, that something was huge, essentially in formation with the STS. And we're finding with the International Space Station that they're a little bit more open in what they see, and they're reporting almost weekly that there's UFOs out there in space.
Yeah, sure. There's so much going on, it's silly. But the government, of course, doesn't think we have any rights at all, let alone the God-given right to know that we're being visited by who knows whom. They know, at least they have an idea. And ever since they stopped issuing orders to shoot them down, we know that there was something, a major change occurred in the early to mid-50s. And
well,
they put gun cameras in instead of guns.
With MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, we're getting about 1,000 UFO reports a month. And then there's Peter Davenport with the National UFO Reporting Center, and he's getting about 1,000 a month.
So, I think he got 1,200. I think he got 1,200 in July. Some crazy.
Right. Well, the point is that we're looking at a couple thousand reports each month, and I'm getting some myself,
You're getting 1,000 a month. You're right. It's a couple thousand, and that's all we hear about. And Peter said long ago, and I believe him, we're at best, and I don't even think we're making it to this level, 0.1% of sightings are ever reported to either him or you or Brian Vike up in Canada. It just doesn't happen. People just don't want to get involved. So what we do get, we're very happy to get, but it's tiny, teeny, tiny.
First of all, it takes somebody who's fairly good with the computer and then is willing to spend a half hour of his time to fill out all the questions and so on.
Yeah, it's not hard.
It's not hard, but at the same time, it takes a certain amount of time and effort to do it.
But I want to say, and I agree with you, but I want to say that I do believe that people who take the time to do that feel better for having done it. They've made a record, they've made a contribution, and they recorded what they have seen. And they don't have to take public ridicule. Their anonymity is protected. But send these reports in, folks. And George has a form. Peter has a form. Peter's site is ufocenter.com. You know George's. Good point. I want to open one of your newsletters and give everybody a quick look here. So, can you?
And we have investigators all over the country that, if you see something, we'll call you and investigate what you have.
They'll send somebody. We'll send a qualified investigator out to talk to you, candidly, quietly, and we just want the information.
Later we'll talk to one of the investigators.
Very good. Okay. Well, let's look at, come on, George, 33, 34, 35. Don't put me on the spot here. Which one?
I think they're all significant.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, let's go look at number 33 then. Yeah, da, 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 da. Surf City. There actually is a place called Surf City.
That's where I am right now.
I know.
Surf City.
I know. Now, okay, I've tried to get this number 33 to open up, and it won't open up. So,
really?
No, that means I'm going to have to try
number
34.
Almost anywhere in the country, there's regular sightings, and this is a standard one.
Look at the crop circle I have at the top of my homepage. These things are wild. Yeah, there are a lot of hoaxes, but not this one. It's too perfect. And these things appear overnight. There have been so many lights seen down low over the fields, obviously involved in the creation of some of these, that it's amazing. All right, let's try and see if number 34 will open up. George, it won't open up. Let me try number 34.
One thing on 34 is there's an interesting flying object. In the beginning of each file, we try to put one of the better sightings, and we're getting a lot of video and pictures that people are taking. And so many people in the world now are carrying a camera and a cell phone.
Oh, yeah. Don't leave home without one. Yeah.
They're getting good pictures, and this is a very odd object. It could be a drone. We don't know, but it's taken over Los Angeles, England, on August 16th, and it has short wings and kind of a flat front end to it, and a couple lights underneath it. But in any case, it's a good picture. Nobody's indicated that it is a drone, which it might be, but. Pictures are coming in on a regular basis from all over the world.
Yep. Yep, yep, yep.
Particularly
yep.
From English-speaking countries. But, you know, English is one of the most prominent languages throughout the world, so consequently people report. What I'm on 34, one of the chief reports is from former Defense Minister of Canada, Paul Hellyer.
I need to get Paul. Do you have Paul's email? I haven't had him on for years. I need to have him on again just to pay tribute to his integrity and his courage. If you can get that to me, I'd appreciate it. I'll bring you on with him, actually. And
here's a man who was in a very important position and is willing to tell the public on television and other places that so many worlds were being visited, that aliens are here, and that don't be surprised if you see them in your local store.
Right, or out your front window. Who knows?
Right.
Paul Hellyer is the former Secretary of Defense for Canada. All right, now it doesn't get much higher than that. He knew everything about Canadian military and defense postures, protocols, procedures, and plans. He was in the inner circle. And for him to come forward, it would be like one of our secretaries of defense coming forward. Same thing. And he took a risk, but he was going to stand on the truth. And we really, he's been on before a couple times, and just a wonderful man. And I'm very honored to have had him on, and let's get him back on, George. I think we should, if we can. I can't get these to open here. I hope you folks can. I've sent a note off to James to try to fix them. But number 33, 34, and 35 are there. One a week, and 52 will be here before you know it. Crazy time. What have you heard of by way of a report lately that has caused you to say, that's wild?
Well, Mary Kay is going to talk to you in a few minutes about one of the best reports we've had in a long time.
Uh-huh.
And was actually highlighted by MUFON as best report in July. And I thought you would like to hear about it, you know, from the firsthand, from the investigator, Mary Kay. And the report was took place July 18th in Joplin, Missouri.
Okay. Let's go ahead and bring Mary Kay on now. We have a break coming up in a couple minutes. We'll say hello to her. Why don't you do an introduction and we'll bring her on?
Well, she's our assistant state director in Missouri and has done a great job. They're investigating some very important cases. And it's a little unusual to have a lady who has this expertise. And I think that she's doing a wonderful job, and I feel it's important that people realize that not only are, you know, men involved, but women as well in the investigation of UFOs.
Sure. Well, we're all human beings, people, and this is good to see. Mary Kay, are you there?
Yes, and it's Margie Kay.
Well, we got Kay right. Okay, Margie K. Do you have a middle name too?
Yes, but it's not published.
I see. I'm just all right. Now, Margie K, Assistant State Director from the Show Me State. So when we come back in another minute or so, we're gonna take a break. You'll tell me, if you would, and tell our listeners what it is you're investigating and what you've seen. And have you had any personal sightings, by the way, real quick?
Oh, yes. Just had one the other day while I was on a UFO investigation.
Really? This started when you were a kid?
Yes, it sure did.
I heard that in your voice.
I'm a long-time experiencer.
Yeah, I heard that. You could tell by the way you said that. Oh, yes. You must have, I'm getting the feeling you've had quite a few, maybe a dozen in your life. I don't know.
You're very perceptive.
Yeah, well,
it's in your voice.
Okay, so Missouri. We don't get a lot of reports from Missouri that I see. George does. Peter Davenport does. You do. How busy has it been in Missouri this summer?
Well, we've been really busy for the last 3 years. It's been kind of crazy, actually. But for the last 90 days, we've had 74 cases.
Wow.
And many of those remain unexplained. So
how do they find,
we're very busy here.
How do they find you to make a report? Do people know to go to the Mutual UFO Network? Do they just go online and type in UFO reports or something? How do they find you?
Yeah, most people do go online, and if they're not aware of any place to report, they just type in, you know, UFO report, and several sites will come up, and MUFON is one of them, and people will file a report, and then it'll be assigned to whichever state the event happened in, and the state director or I will assign the case to the investigator.
Very good. I should also mention Bill Puckett, UFOs Northwest, wonderful investigator. There are some great people out there like you, Margie Kay, and you work for, if it weren't for the money, you probably wouldn't do this, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's right. There's big money in it.
Yeah. All right. Back in just a couple minutes. Don't go away, and we shall continue. Okay, welcome back. George Feiler is with us, and our special guest tonight, Margie Margie Kay from the great state of Missouri, the Assistant State Mutual UFO Network Director. Okay, Margie, and let us hear what you want to present tonight. You've got a real special case you're working on, I guess.
Well, yes, I sent this to George, and he put it in his publication and then gave me a call and thought it was interesting enough to bring it up tonight. And I think so, too. I think it's one of the biggest cases I've ever done. On July 8th, a commercial airline pilot in Joplin, Missouri, was walking his dog, and he saw some orange lights in the sky, which caught his eye because he knew immediately that that wasn't normal. And he kept his eye on this object, which approached very slowly. It started at high altitude and then got lower and lower. And as he was getting close and he realized that this was a bona fide UFO and wasn't any normal, airline or airplane or helicopter or anything like that, he stopped a gentleman who was driving by with his wife and made them get out of the car. He happened to be a neighbor, and this gentleman is also a pilot and an ex-police officer, and he is also in engineering management at the Joplin Globe Democrat. So, and then his wife was with him. She is a healthcare representative worker. And so we have three very credible witnesses to this event. As they got out of their vehicle, the craft had got quite a bit lower in altitude and flew almost directly over their heads.
How close? Rock throwing distance?
We're talking estimated, one gentleman says 100 feet, the other one says 300 feet.
That's rock throwing distance, yeah.
And the size of the yard of this gentleman, which is an acre wide.
Uh-huh.
So it's an acre wide and an acre deep. It was a teardrop shape, which is unusual in this business.
Yes,
We don't see too many of those.
And it covered pretty much the acre?
Yes.
All right. That's a big piece of machinery.
It's very large. And it had a lot of very bright orange lights around the perimeter of the base.
Uh-huh.
There were no lights at the top or sides. And then there were many blue lights on the interior, small blue lights, and a red one and two orange lights, about medium size.
That is absolutely spectacular. They must have been stunned.
They were stunned. They were amazed. They couldn't believe what they were looking at. And the thing that one pilot kept saying to me over and over is there was no sound. How could this thing be in the air? What was the propulsion system? There was no emissions, no sound, no vibration. And for the craft to be that close, whatever it was, should have had those things. So the story gets even stranger.
May I ask a question, please?
Mm-hmm.
This object, was it illuminated in its entirety, or was it metallic and a tear-shaped metallic craft?
Metallic with lights on craft with lights on the bottom.
All right. Wow. George, the idea of a tear-shaped object is fascinating. With a wider front and a smaller tail. Sounds aerodynamic.
Well, actually,
go ahead.
The point was in the front. The point of the teardrop was in the front.
Oh, even stranger. Wow.
Yes.
All
yes,
right.
It was.
Wow.
Well,
there's nothing like that in the inventory.
Yeah. See, this is the point, folks. For those of you who want to explain these all away as being, well, our technology and there are craft and there are people. No, there are too damned many different kinds. Hundreds. It's not possible. One or two or three might be ours, maybe. But this is ridiculous. Go ahead.
Well, things got stranger because one gentleman ran inside his house to get his wife and his camera.
Uh-huh.
And
in which order? Oh, never mind. That's just a little joke.
That the older gentleman who's the pilot, first one who saw this.
I got it.
Is the one who ran inside.
Okay.
So the other two stood outside watching the object as it continued to descend, and they're on a big hill, by the way. So this object came from the upper part of the hill and going down.
And it kept getting lower?
Yes, getting lower, and went behind trees. And their thought was that this thing was landing or crash landing or had some problems and needed to land.
Yeah.
And they thought they knew where it was. So the three of them, the older gentleman came out. It was gone by that time. The three of them jumped in the Jeep and drove to the spot where they thought it may have landed. They pulled to the side of the road, and this happens to be a cow pasture, a very large cow pasture. And the first thing I thought was, interested in the cattle, because I also do cattle mutilation investigations.
Sure.
And, you know, as you know, there's some strange stuff going on with that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they pulled to the side of the road, and all of a sudden, their warning beep starts coming on inside the vehicle. That is the beep that's when you have a door open. But they didn't have a door open. And they took their flashlight. He had one of those very high-powered flashlights and shone it out the window into the pasture. The only thing was the light beam stopped working. The beam would not shine, even though they could look at the flashlight and see that it was on, but the beam wasn't shining. So then he tries to get the car into drive. They're getting concerned, and they want to move on. But the car is stuck. The shift is stuck, and it would not go. He finally gets it out. He said it took about 5 minutes to get it to go into gear.
Gee.
He gets the vehicle into gear, drives down the street a ways. The flashlight beam comes on. The car stops beeping. They turn around. They go back. When they get to the same place, the same thing happens to the vehicle that happened the first time. They leave, go home. They didn't think that the object was nearby, but they knew something strange had happened. When I went down to investigate...
Margie, hold that thought. We have to take a little break. We'll come right back and let you finish this up. All I can say is, wow, that is really something. Three very good witnesses, the airline pilot. I don't know what I'd do if I saw a craft that big right over my head. I just don't know. That's almost an imponderable. It's so enormous. It just dwarfs your senses to even hear about something like that. All right, we'll be right back. Okay, let's get right back to Margie. All right, Margie, go ahead. This is good. You got down there. How long after the event was it that you got there?
We were down there on the 13th. The event happened on the 8th.
Okay, go ahead.
And I asked if there had been any physical effects, and John Cruzan, who has given me permission to use his name, pulled his sleeve up, and he had a terrible large burn on his arm.
Oh, yeah.
That he noticed after the event happened.
Mm-hmm.
He had not had it looked at, and I suggested that he did have it looked at medically. He was also very ill, and he looked ill, and he was perspiring the day I saw him. And that continued for 3 weeks. He had severe nausea, bad vomiting, and he did go to the physician about that, and he said he did not know what the cause was, that he didn't have a virus or any type of infection. He couldn't figure out why he was sick. Well, then he talked to another physician about the burn on his arm. This was a friend of his. He didn't see anybody professionally, but the friend was a doctor, and he said that that burn was consistent with a laser burn.
Radioactive?
Not radioactive.
All right. It was checked?
That was checked.
Geiger counter?
No radiation, yes.
All right.
I checked the vehicle for radiation and did an EMF readings, used a K2 meter, and I found normal readings around the vehicle, but when I got to the top on the canvas part, the readings skyrocketed. So that's unexplained, why there would be an electromagnetic field reading on top of a canvas.
You had
roof.
A tri-field meter, and you're up there?
Uh-huh.
That? Okay.
Yeah.
Very odd to have a residual EMF like that. I don't understand.
Yeah. It has happened before. I've had this on large cases where there's close encounters. I've even gotten EMF readings off of wood fences.
How interesting.
In this case, you think this is
a transmission of a frequency which really shouldn't be residual. It should go away.
Right.
Huh.
It's puzzling. It's very puzzling. And I don't know that it's something that our technology can even understand.
That's wild.
Perhaps I would love if anybody does know the reasoning for this, if they would explain it to me.
Yeah, I'd like to know too. That's wild.
Yeah.
Okay, so the top of the Jeep had an EMF reading 5 days after the exposure to this craft. And
right.
This is, all right, go ahead.
Well, the only other thing about this case is that I've kept in touch with the primary witness, the first person who reported this, and this was John Cruzan, the ex-police officer. And, he had training, investigative training. And the thing is that he's so concerned now that he has contacted people in law enforcement, politicians. He wants answers. He wants to know what this thing was. And he's just very serious about it. So he and I are working together to figure out some ways that we can do that, maybe get the attention of the governor, start a petition, something like that. And, he wants to take this to the highest level. And I commend him for that, because most witnesses, would not go to that length. And most witnesses actually want to remain anonymous.
Yeah, sure. That's right. 99.9 tenths of them want to remain anonymous. That's my view.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
but he knows
so
what he saw, and he's not afraid to talk about it.
Margie, can you get the gentleman to come on the program?
I imagine so.
Well,
yeah.
Why don't you? Would you look into that, and we'll have you and George and him come on a week after the next, perhaps maybe like on the 16th or something. I'll pencil that in with George's name right now, if you can work that out. That's Tuesday the 16th, so maybe that'll work.
That'll be good.
I'd love to talk to this gentleman.
It's nice to get someone who's interested in going forward and has actually seen something, recently.
Yep. Well, this sounds to me like an absolutely, not that they all aren't, but this one, a teardrop shape, going with the small pointed end forwards with the lighting array on it, a huge machine making no noise. This is, let your imagination try to fill in that kind of a picture in your mind. This is just staggering. Anyway, if you can get him to come on, we'll do whatever he needs, guarantee his anonymity in any way he wants, although he's using his name. That's fine, whatever he'd like. I'd want to hear from this man, too. You're lucky. This is really exciting. This is why.
Yeah, this is a big case. And we've had five other reports since from the same area, and every one of them is within a mile of this event.
Really? Different different shaped craft?
One is a similar. He calls it an oval shape.
Mm-hmm.
In one case, there was no craft sighted, but the vehicle acted very strangely. And then, actually, the three witnesses saw an owl, which, as you know, in ufology, that could be something else. And they saw a very large 3-foot owl that she explains to me is not being real looking.
No, this is a screen memory form that is is routinely used when something is apparently in the area, and those who are on board it, want the humans not to see it, so they'll give them an image of something else, like a big owl sitting on a fence, which shouldn't be. 3-foot
right.
Owls are not common. That's too big.
Exactly. And I've had that happen on several cases.
You?
We're
going to have Margie back on here and tell your story one of these nights. I'm not joking.
I've got a lot to tell.
Well, let's kind of plan on that for maybe later on in the month, and I'd love to do that. Hearing people's stories is always fascinating for me and our listeners, and so give that some thought. The invitation is there.
Okay.
So what's next? What do you do next with this?
Well, I put a press release out in order to prompt more people to come forward about that particular event.
Local newspapers, that kind of thing?
Well, I sent it out to papers, but no papers printed it. In fact, the Joplin Globe would not print it. And it was one of their people. But that
great American journalism. Just right on the spot. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I thought if anyone would, they would. But no, they didn't do it. But it nonetheless hit, you know, the UFO sites, websites, and people saw it, and some actually responded, and that's how we got these other reports.
Same craft. You did have corroborating reports of the teardrop.
I have one for sure that I think is the same craft. The others, I can't be certain. Like I said, that one, they didn't see a craft, but they know something happened. But it's so strange that all of these sightings were within a mile of this major event on the 8th.
Yeah. I remember hearing of sightings years ago, when eyewitnesses would see a flurry of different shaped craft showing up in the same area, kind of on parade, like a vortex opened up and four or five different shaped craft would be there, and then they would just go on. Who knows? It is really wild up there.
It's strange, that's for sure. I enjoy doing the investigating, but, you know, sometimes I'd like to have some answers.
Well, we're going to have to do the best we can do, and that's through the good graces of folks like you. I think we really do have about as many answers as we're going to get, short of having a direct contact with one of these people, or whatever they are, to be able to be broadcast in an audio and video sense. We know we're being visited. We know they have incredible technology. We know that electromagnetic things happen to our crude electronics in comparison to theirs. Cars don't work, lights dim out, radios quit. But not being able to put a car in gear, I got to admit, I haven't heard that one before.
Yeah, and not only that, twice.
Yeah, now
and
I got it.
And only in that spot, and it was a new vehicle.
Yeah. Strange stuff.
Automatic transmission?
They mostly
manual transmission.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it is or not. Actually, I do need to find that out.
Well, we'll find out maybe on the 16th, and then if we can get the gentleman back, we'll just walk through the story in slow motion with him. Were you, by the way, putting ads in local newspapers for you folks who may want to do your own research is a good way. Just put an ad in the classifieds, UFO, put in big letters, and did you see anything on such and such a date? If you did, please give me a call, and that's one way to do it.
I personally
go ahead, George.
Personally found that letters to the editor where they will not, you know, actually have the story. Sometimes in letters to the editor, they'll allow it, and then, you know, you give your
right
address and so on. And I've got a lot of response through letters of the editor.
Mm-hmm.
And well, a lot of people read that for some reason.
Well, they do. It's like comments to a YouTube video. People will read them. Margie Kay, thank you very much for that. I hope you can be back on the 16th with your eyewitness, and we'll look forward to that. Thank you. Excellent description. Perfect.
Okay.
The
thank
same
you for
time.
Having me.
Same time, George. Let me see. Yeah, it'll be the first hour.
That'd be fine.
Same time. 7
There's
Pacific,
a lot going on worldwide, and I think the UFOs are becoming aware of it and maybe have something to do with it.
Well, they're taking close note of what we're doing, that's for damn sure. And I wish they'd stop it. That's all I can say. We're not going to.
Right.
We just don't have the intellectual fortitude as a species to seem to look at the bigger picture. All right, George, thank you very much, and we'll talk soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Good night. All right, be right back with hour number two in just a couple minutes. Hang on.